Hello, and welcome to Historical, with myself, Matt Nelson, and my partner in time, Wayne Bridgman.
Hello, listeners.
It is great to be able to be back with you again so soon. Hello. We have a lot of requests from listeners mounting up, and so we're trying to speed up the release process a little.
Indeed we are. Yes, hello everyone. It's great to continue to hear your comments and ideas, as we have listeners about 40 different countries now. So
some as diverse as Ghana or Saudi Arabia.
That's right. So don't be shy. We're happy to look at all subjects. So feel free to write in and make a suggestion, you know, about a podcast, that is. No need to be like that. So we're over the flu season now, Matt.
Yay!
We're refreshed,
healthy,
fit, healthy, full of spunk.
I'm not sure if that translates to other nations. In Ghana, for example, being full of spunk is more about having energy and the go-get attitude than it is about semen.
Yeah, it's not naval.
Ooh.
What's happening? You okay, Matt?
So I was classically trained, and that is, what did we call an ooh? Mysterious ooh.
A simple ooh will suffice.
Ooh, wait! I just felt a shiver go down my spine.
In spring?
That is weird. I wonder, is there anything to do with the subject that we're talking about today? What is the subject?
Well, it may well do, Matt. It may well do. Because
I figured.
After listening to our listeners...
We are very good to you. We listen.
We'll be focusing on a very mysterious area of world history, Matt. What could it be, I wonder? Now, if I said to you, Matt, broomsticks, black cats, tall hats, strange practices and poor personal hygiene, what would you think of, Matt?
I don't know. Maybe last time we had a lads' weekend away?
No, it's not that, Matt. No, something marginally worse than that. Witches, Matt. Witches!
Whoa. Oh, no, not witches. I hate witches.
Now,
many
of our listeners will know you don't need to be under a spell to appreciate that so-called witches have had a bad run of it in history. In fact, during the early modern period...
That's about 1400 to 1700 AD.
Yeah, about 300 years there. An estimated 70,000... to 100,000 souls...
Poor souls.
...were executed for allegedly doing the devil's work. But we'll be looking under the witch's dress, as it were, to find out more about the type of women under there.
Yes. Sounds a bit hairy. Sounds like there's a high chance of finding some spider legs.
Ooh.
Interestingly, though, so were these just batty old harmless crones?
Or even just nice women...
Or was there something more sinister afoot? Or was it all just a load of old cack? Were the local populace afraid of mysterious acts they could not understand? Because let's face it, back in those days,
people
they couldn't
stupid.
Understand a lot. Yeah. Exactly, very low intelligence. Or was there serious foul play availing to produce such reviled hatred of these so-called witches?
Oh.
Let's find out.
Okay.
Picture a witch in your mind's eye and come with us on a journey of witchy discovery. First, let's lay out our definition of what we believe witchcraft to be.
So, witchcraft, it's also called witchery or spellcraft, actually, broadly means the practice of and belief in, Matt, magical skills and abilities that are able to be exercised sort of, you know, individually or designated social groups.
Or a coven.
A coven, for example, good example.
A coven of witches.
Yeah, an excellent example. Probably the best one you could come up with.
Or vampires.
Yeah, or by people that have, you know, the sort of the necessary esoteric secret knowledge that's normally passed down by word of mouth, not written down, not good for us. That's sort of essentially... a dictionary definition, if you like, of witchcraft.
So building on that, then, I think it's fair to say that witchcraft is a complex concept that varies culturally and societally.
Like voodoo, for example.
So it's difficult to define with precision. Plus, cross-cultural assumptions about the meaning of the term should be applied with caution, Mr. Bridgman.
Yes, damn right, Matt. Always apply caution with witchcraft, lest you be turned into a toad or something like that.
Or a newt.
A newt's even worse. We will focus...
They turned me into a newt.
Got better. We'll focus on witchcraft in the Western world, listeners, during the medieval and early modern periods, as we mentioned earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are two... Why are we doing that? Well, there are two interesting events which really aid us in trying to fathom what witchcraft's effects on society really was. So the first being the record, that's the important thing, records kept by the famous Witchfinder General in England, who we'll see later on, and another being the famous, or should I say infamous, Matt, Salem Witch Trials in North America. But first, let's take a look at the background of some of the women who may have been caught up in the witchcraft accusations.
Hundreds or even thousands of years ago, people were forced to live with much more primitive lives than we currently know today.
Oh, well, not in all cases, Matt. I've seen what goes on in Margate.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Good old Margate.
Seaside town in the UK, listeners.
Yep. Living without the luxury of modern medicine and treatments, when a person was sick, ill, or in pain, there was little that could be done about it.
That's right.
In the old days, you got sick, you got worse, and you died.
Very sad.
Becoming ill was much more dangerous in those ancient days. The ramifications of any sickness was frequently much more serious, as we said. Remember when we were camping, Wayne, and you got that injury and you couldn't get any painkillers? It would have been just like that.
Yes, I understand completely. I was stung once, listeners, while camping and had no painkillers. It's a very bad experience. Yeah. In fact, I have a fear of bees now.
Yes.
And I think people play the horror of a bee sting down, Matt.
Yeah.
Anyway, during those early times, there was some sage women that learned the value of healing herbs. And indeed, other types of homeopathic treatments.
What, like the buttock massage?
No, homeopathy, Matt, means alternative treatments outside of commercial medicine.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, so anyway, now these women, they would have been very wise, Matt, when it came to their knowledge of herbal remedies. Many people received aid and were helped by the homemade remedies, of course, made by these women. These astute ladies, skilled in the art of natural medicines, also sometimes functioned as midwives and assisted in the delivery of babies.
So they all sound pretty nice so far, really. They sound pretty good girls.
Very
really.
Useful to the community. So they'd use things like plant-based medicines to ease the pain and suffering experienced during childbirth, Matt. So not only were they the midwives sort of helping with the physical delivery, they'd also have that medicine to make the experience
which is
less horrible.
Which is very sophisticated, actually, for this time period. Now, during this time of accusations, insinuations, rough justice, as well as extreme hysteria, many women were brought up on charges of witchcraft and were ultimately executed.
Mm.
Very sadly. These executions are often depicted as being burned alive while tied to a stake, but in reality it was usually by hanging. But why, you ask? Well,
why,
you'd be right to ask indeed, because it's crazy. Well, little was understood about healing and medicine in those days. And as Christianity spread across Europe, many clergy from the church felt very upset by the existence of learned women who were healing others with medicine and natural remedies. As far as the church was concerned, all healing should be done strictly through men in the church. They don't like them women.
That's true, Matt. Well, there are also many others who felt that if a person was sick or ill, that it was God's punishment for some sin committed, and the suffering that came from that illness was just something that must be dealt with by the afflicted person. Mm. Yeah. Not unreasonable. Only recently I was punished via the medium of vomiting wildly, Matt, due to cooking a bad, bad pork chop. That was my punishment. One gets what one deserves.
Yes.
Now, over time, the healers began to be accused of various nefarious things, including heresy, being anti-Christian, kind of the same thing, I guess, having left-wing political views, and the natural progression from there, of course, is that eventually many were accused of devil worship.
Ah, devil worship, the cornerstone of all evil.
Yeah, I wonder what these women would have been like when they're undergoing these practices.
These strange, abhorrent practices.
Round about the cauldron go, in the poisoned entrails throw. Sweltered venom, sleeping got, foul thou first in the charmed pot. Double toil and trouble, fire burn and cauldron bubble.
Kill it on a fire snake.
Fire snake?
In the cauldron boil and bake. I have next than toe of frog.
Sorry, excuse me, but what is the toe of the frog for?
We'll love the bat and the tongue of the dog.
Look, sorry to interrupt you, but I think this is quite important. What is the toe of the frog for? Is it like protein to make you stronger?
It is not for us to question the ancient rites, sister.
The toe of the frog is for... is for... Well, look, it doesn't matter.
No! It's definitely tongue of dog. That isn't to ensure the potion taker has a nice shiny hair, I think. Though, there is a side effect where the taker might feel an urge to lick their...
Silence, sisters!
Let us not disturb the ceremony spirits, for they are impatient.
They have to get back to Sprite Town for a fairy cake party.
Fairy cake party.
Now concentrate. We have to get this right to cure Mrs. Dubry. She has rickets, something awful.
Okay. Adder's fork and blind worm sling. Lizard's leg. An owlet's wing for a charm of powerful trouble, like a hell broth and bubble. Double, double, toil and trouble, fire burn and...
Why do we have to call this hell broth then? I thought this was a cure.
Oh, Mildred, it is. Well, I'm not sure, to be honest, but... Old Mother Thistle said it's
old
to make...
Old Mother Thistle!
Oh, may she rest in peace.
Mother Thistle!
Said it was to make it more mysterious, magical, and dangerously occult-sounding.
Occult-sounding!
You know, to put people off trying to copy our valuable patients. Lest they incur the wrath of something unpleasant.
But do we really want to be associated with the occult if we are helping people? You know how the church feels about the old ways?
Don't worry, Mildred. It'll be fine.
Yeah, it should be all right.
Curious and curious. Food for thought there.
Certainly interesting ladies.
It is possible, listeners, to trace the origin of witch hunting to an incident that occurred in 1208.
Oh, okay.
Two of the Pope's inquisitors were staying in a house in... Now, Wayne, help me out with this one. Avignonay.
Why not? This is in the south of France.
It's in the south of France. Yes. Now, they were staying there to root out heretics. Good old heretic rooting. Outing of rooting. Let's just say it's to find heretics, not in any way to interfere with heretics. Now, in the middle of the night, a knight of Raymond VI, who believed that the Old Testament's God was a demon, was admitted to the house. He slaughtered Pierre de Castellier. After his murder, the Pope was determined to stamp out heretics at all costs.
The guy was a heretic himself.
Well, indeed.
So, after this event, a bloody crusade followed. Another one. Cathars were dragged from their homes and burned. And in 1244, 200 of them were burned on a gigantic bonfire at Monségur. Those that survived were no longer accused of heresy. They were accused of a new and strange crime, Matt. Conspiring with the devil. Or as it became known, witchcraft.
So sinister. The word witch actually is derived from the word Wicca, meaning the wise one. Now, certainly once considered a wise and knowledgeable resource during the trying times, witches were now considered to be something to be absolutely feared and avoided. The church viewed healing, once helpful to many, now as evil sorcery. Pagan worship, and sometimes very much akin to the black magic. We're not talking about the chocolates here, we're talking about...
That's a popular UK confectionery item, I should point out.
Sort of hit the heyday in the 1990s with Milk Tray.
Milk Tray was there, yeah. Both favourites of mine.
Yeah. Now, these supposed witches were accused of very bad things.
Very bad.
Most specifically, that of doing the devil's evil bidding.
Does it get any worse?
Well, depends. Anyhow, doing the devil's evil bidding and being cahoots with him in some orchestrated plan to destroy mankind.
Because
these people were basically stupid.
Well, cahoots is as bad as it gets. Now, to some in modern times, witchcraft often occupies a religious, divinatory or medicinal role, i.e. a positive force for good, Matt, deeply intertwined in spirituality and nature.
Doesn't sound too evil to me.
Now, well, this was the case centuries ago too, until the church came along and started throwing around these trumped-up charges. Now, the idea that witchcraft shares common ground with negative concepts, such as dark sorcery, necromancy, possession, evil, the occult, is all bad press, it seems, and there is little evidence out there to support it. But the negative association was sufficient to excuse terrible persecution of those poor women to be linked with the practice. But was there any justification for it, Matt?
Now, witchcraft was not made a capital offence in Britain until 1563. Although it was deemed heresy and was denounced by the Pope, Innocent VIII, in 1484. Now, as a result, from 1484 to around 1750, as we alluded to earlier, some 200,000 innocent witches were tortured, burnt or hanged in Western Europe, Wayne. Terrible, but let's hope they had the marshmallows on a stick ready for the bonfires.
Sweet. Well, remember also, 200,000 is a lot because the population was a lot smaller in those days. So it's quite it's a lot of people.
And it's predominantly the females, right? So not always, but predominantly, I guess.
Yeah, well, it's truly awful. I mean, how would you feel if a loved one was torn from your grasp and chucked on a bonfire? I mean, most supposed witches were usually old women and invariably poor. And those who were unfortunate enough to be sort of, you know, crone-like, snaggle-toothed, sunken-cheeked, and or having sort of hairy lips, were assumed to possess the evil eye. If they also had a cat, this was taken as proof, too, as witches always had like an animal familiar that they'd interact with.
Mm.
Yeah, the cat being the most common, of course. It's an odd choice, though, because cats must have been very common, especially in rural areas, to keep the old vermin down, you know.
I know that, you know, the classic witch they burn isn't big-breasted and firm-bottomed.
Yeah, it's blue, hunched over crone, blue the eyes. Big nose, yeah. Warts.
They wanted to keep those women.
Yeah, kept those themselves.
Yeah. Many unfortunate women were condemned of this sort of flimsy evidence and hanged after ongoing appalling, and it was absolutely appalling, torture. The Pilney Winks.
That's the thumb screws.
And iron caspy claws.
That's like a sort of a form of leg irons heated over a brazier,
Jesus,
of course.
Sounds horrendous. Usually got a confession from the supposed witch. There were worse forms of torture for the more resilient women, which we will cover later, if you can bear it. But it was pretty terrible.
Worse than any horror film you can think of. Now, thanks to negative press, witch fever gripped East Anglia, that's in the east of England, for 14 terrible months between 1645 and 1646. The people of these eastern counties were solidly Puritan and rabid anti-Catholics, and easily swayed by bigoted preachers whose mission was to seek out the slightest whiff of heresy.
Sounds like a new pagan eau de toilette. The whiff of heresy smells like a burning effigy of the horned god. Attract all kinds of bugs, guaranteed to get you laid. During this period, a man named Matthew Hopkins, an unsuccessful lawyer, it is important to remember, arrived on the scene. Now, he became known as the Witch Finder General. He had 68 supposed witches put to death in Bury St. Edmunds alone, and 19 hanged at Chelmsford in a single day. After the massacre in Chelmsford, he set off for Norfolk and Suffolk. A place called Aldeburgh paid him £6 for clearing the town folk of witches. King's Lynn paid him £15, and Grateful Stowmarket, £23.
A lot of money in those days.
It was, yeah. This was at a time when the daily wage was 2.5 pence. So you can see this guy is getting a shedload of cash. And I suspect rather plays up to the crowd. So he gets a reputation. Now, which may help us, I guess, these wages, understand why he was miraculously able to find so many witches, right? So he...
Yeah. Well, even today, actually, there's a heart carved on a wall in the marketplace at King's Lynn, which is supposed to mark the spot where the heart of Margaret Reed, a condemned witch who was being burnt at the stake, leapt from the flames and struck the wall. Now, did that really happen, or did people just embellish that particular story to whip up people into a frenzy?
I think we know.
So much of Matthew Hopkins' theories of deduction were based on devil's marks. So that was a wart or mould or even a flea bite he could take to be a devil's mark. And he used his patented jabbing needle to see if these marks were insensitive to pain or not. If they weren't, then there was a problem. But his needle, it was like a 3-inch long spike.
Jesus.
But it retracted into the spring-loaded handle. So the unfortunate women never felt any pain. You know, he couldn't lose. God.
Oh, my word. There were other tests for witches too. Mary Sutton of Bedford was put to the swimming test. With her thumbs tied to opposite big toes, she was flung into the river.
I don't know what stroke you'd call that.
So, yeah, let's get that vision. Her thumbs are tied to her big toes, so she's sort of bent over, unable to sort of move either, I guess. Now, she's flung into the river. If she floats, she is guilty.
Oh.
If she sinks, innocent, oh. But poor Mary floated.
You can't win.
Strange, that. Bit of a lose-lose right there for her, really, wasn't there? You can't win either way. So,
well, and a last reminder of Hopkins' reign of terror was discovered in St. Osyth in Essex in 1921. It was two female skeletons, Matt, that were found in a garden, pinned into unmarked graves with iron rivets through their joints.
Oh, Jesus.
Now, they don't know if that happened before or after they died, but it was to make sure a witch could not return from the grave. Hopkins was responsible for about 300 executions that we know of. You know, there'll be small villages as well where this sort of thing isn't necessarily written down. I wonder what sort of guy he was.
Well, I've got a pretty good idea what sort of guy he was. And it's spelt...
Let's see. Let's let the listeners decide.
To be honest, it's spelt with a C.
Excuse me, sir. Are you the witch hunter?
That is, I do be. General Hopkins, witch hunter, at your service.
Oh, thank the heavens, Lord. Thank the heavens. There be work for thee down in Broughton, sire. The villagers are calling it Witch's Hole. It be riddled with witches, it be. I tell ye, a terrible pernicious evil is at large, sir.
Oh, really?
Yes, Lord. A most virulent, foul, and dangerous evil, Lord. Very, very dangerous, Lord.
Foul and dangerous, you say? Can it wait? Only there is urgent needing of me in Billingsby. There is some other evil I have to deal with there first. It's a very evil issue, you know. Most pressing, I'm sure.
Oh, sir, please.
Well, I hear some poor young ladies have had a presence enter their bodies, and I'm very eager to see it firsthand.
Billingsby, sire?
Yes.
Well, why are you going there? All to be found in Billingsby is a girls' school, run by nuns. They're very strict there. All the girls are sworn to chase me, Lord. I swear it as God's before me.
Indeed. Indeed. Only I hear the girls may be defiled before I can get to them. Do you have any evidence of this evil and this so-called witch's hell?
Eh, Lord, eh? A woman gave birth to a screaming baby boy with flame-red hair. Red as the devil himself.
I trust you burnt him?
Of course, sir, of course. We're peaceful, God-fearing folk here.
Excellent. Well, gentlemen, it seems you have this situation under control, so if there's nothing that requires my personal attention, I'll have a lot on my hands down in Billingsby. Good day, gentlemen.
A woman!
What's that?
A woman. She,
She
came to my bedchamber, Lord.
Ooh.
She thrust herself upon me and sucked me dry, she did, sir.
I say.
Left me unable to defend myself, she did. Must be evil, sire. Only possible explanation. It's what I told my wife, Lord.
Did she enjoy it?
Aye, Lord.
Did you enjoy it?
She forced me to, Lord. She sucked the very essence of my...
Enough!
That's what I said.
Very well. I will enter Witch's Hell, and I will not withdraw, no matter how messy it may become. Let us projaculate no further. There is much nobbing to be done.
Nobbing, Lord?
By which I mean... Look, I'll see you later.
Very well, my Lord. Very well.
It was a time when justice was by no means assured.
Sounds like it.
Another woman murdered for being a witch, Mother Shipton, is remembered still in Knaresborough, Yorkshire. Although called a witch, she is more famous for her predictions about the future.
Ooh.
She has apparently foresaw cars, trains, planes, and the telegraph pole.
For younger listeners, that is a phone before mobiles.
Her cave and a place next to it called the Dripping Well, where objects basically were hung under this dripping water and they were turned to stone.
Ooh.
They're still popular sites today in Knaresborough and Yorkshire.
Though many of the acts against witchcraft were repealed in 1736, witch hunting still went on. In 1863, an alleged male witch, maybe a warlock, was drowned in a pond in Headingham, Essex. And in 1945, Matt, the body of an elderly farm labourer was found near the village of Meon Hill in Warwickshire. His throat had been cut, and his corpse was pinned to the earth with a pitchfork. The murder remains unsolved. However, the man was reputed locally to be a wizard.
Ah, now let's go back to that village of Witch's Hole. The Witchfinder General is accompanying his peasant associate into the smoke-filled, dim interior of the Root and Shoot pub.
Not a very reputable venue.
Evil will always assume the most attractive of disguises, my good man.
A wooshire? Okay.
Thus, one must always beware the woman of the species. The more womanly the woman, the more evil the evil is.
But that's strange, my lord. The only witches I ever see were ugly enough to make a blind man flinch.
That is because, well, they're very clever. They obviously fooled you, man. I sense there is a witch in this very room.
Oh, my God. Oh.
She do be.
There, Lord. The ugly one. That's the one that came to me.
You. That one.
No, Lord. The ugly one I meant.
Seize the sorceress. Such a terrible infestation of evil will require a very detailed and projaculated, prolonged inspection.
But I'm not a witch. I go to the church and I help the little orphans.
You look pretty wicked to me, I must say. Evil, I mean.
Oh, please, sir, I'm not a witch. I'm a wench.
I shall be the judge of that and the jury. and the executioner. And... no, that's it. You have been found guilty of kissing a goat during the hours of darkness, singing in a minor key, and using vegetables in an ungodly manner. In short, you do be a witch, you do.
Please, Master Hopkins, no!
Your master be Satan, you foul witch. You must subject yourself to my investigations, or be burned as a witch. Come on, this must be an easy decision. I'm very clean for the time period, you know.
No, never. Anyway, I didn't mean to eat the carrot.
Silence, horrible creature! You are a liar. A flaming liar. Burner!
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 Burner
witch! Burner witch! Witch! Okay, my bloodthirsty peasant, set the fire! There, in the hearth! We'll do it right here. That's right. Quiet, everyone. The hideous crone wishes to say something. What's that, witch?
Captain Hopkins, I'd just like to say one thing to you.
What's that?
Curse you, Hopkins! Curse he upon me!
Oh, okay, look, there's no need for that. I know you must be very upset, but come now.
Curse ye!
My two sisters will avenge me. They will boil your blood in your veins. The birds of the air will pluck at your eyes. And the animals of the ground will gnaw on your ballsack.
How horrid! Not the balls. This isn't witchcraft, this is bitchcraft. Look, no need for cursing, I'm just doing my job, dear. Wow. Chilling stuff there, wasn't it?
It was like...
I don't know... Stop being there, listeners. I don't know how trustworthy Matthew Hopkins would be based on that glimpse into the past.
Yeah, probably completely untrustworthy.
Well, it was clear that religious sources were planting enough fear and hysteria into the minds of the people that it ran rampant through many localities. Those accused of practising any form of witchcraft were tried quickly and then were executed publicly as punishment in very hideous and gruesome ways for all in the village to see.
They all liked it, of course. They're all a little bit into...
bloodthirsty, they were.
That's, you know, do that on a Sunday afternoon after lunch, you know, watch a burning. Pretty sick. By killing those who were accused of such practices, it became very easy to scare the general population into conformity and obedience. Mm. It seems that although witches were being accused of being evil and devilish, most devilish indeed, the actual truth may have been that powerful religious men didn't like the idea of a strong woman having any kind of intelligence or aptitude in the community. The church leaders were probably somewhat intimidated by these talented girls, or gals. And it may have been easiest to just eliminate the problem, emphasising, of course, that the church was against black magic and evil, not medicine.
Important point, Matt. You won't hear any discrimination here, listeners. So... because witches had become so feared and the church had come down so strongly against anyone or anything associated with witchcraft, the finger-pointing became more and more commonplace, and the hysteria in the population reached a full-blown fervour, Matt. A fervour! The situation soon reached epic proportions when it was no longer necessary for a person to be practising rudimentary medicine or other such activities to be accused. It seemed that just about anything out of the ordinary could get you into trouble. A series of unfortunate events could be blamed on an evil spell or witchcraft. Events such as illness or stillbirth, miscarriage or a socialist government getting in were often blamed on witches.
If a neighbour became disgruntled, for example, at someone, possibly his neighbour, it was easy enough to eliminate the problem by making an inappropriate allegation about the individual. It seemed that no one was completely safe from being blamed, but in particular, the more unfortunate your circumstances were, the more likely you were to become a target. The torture of witches to extract confessions in England, and vast majority of which were female, the poor ladies, were less violent than in Europe. The methods favoured in England were bread and water diets.
No! Not the bread and water diet! Oh my God, how terrible! Have mercy! I mean, I'm not averse to losing a bit of weight, granted, but have pity! Bloody bread and water diet, no!
Bread and water diet, Wayne. Also, tethering of limbs and worse. Sleep deprivation, otherwise known as watching.
That's worse. Now, for a name that still reverberates through time.
Peter Ustinov?
No, Salem. Salem, Matt.
Yeah.
Salem Witch Trials. The Salem Witch Trials, Matt, were a series of hearings and prosecutions of people accused of witchcraft in colonial Massachusetts, that's the North, Matt, between February 1692 and May 1693. The trials resulted in the executions of 20 people, 14 of them women, and all of them but one by hanging.
12 other women had previously been executed in Massachusetts and Connecticut during the 17th century. So the execution of suspected witches were not as prevalent as in Europe during the same period of time. Okay, so less happening. But this is very public and well-documented case.
Which is why we're interested. But then I suppose that the population at the time was smaller and more mobile. So despite being generally known as the Salem Witch Trials, the preliminary hearings in 1692 were conducted in several towns, actually. You've got Salem Village.
That's now Danvers, isn't it?
That's right, yeah. Salem Town, Ipswich and Andover. The most famous, nay, infamous trials that were conducted by the Court of Oyer and Terminer, it was called, in 1692, more on that later, in Salem Town. But why were these trials so infamous?
Well, in retrospect, it would seem that the episode is one of the colonial America's most notorious cases of mass hysteria. It's been used in political rhetoric and popular literature as a vivid cautionary tale about the dangers of isolationism, religious extremism, obviously very relevant nowadays, false accusations and lapses in due process.
Indeed.
It was not unique either, though, but simply a colonial American example of a much broader phenomenon of the witch trials in the early modern period.
Yep.
So many historians consider the lasting effects of these trials, though, Wayne, to have a very highly influential result in the subsequent United States history.
Yeah.
According to historian George Lincoln Burr, good old Mr. Burr, the Salem witchcraft was the rock on which the theocracy was shattered. Make of that, of course, what you will, listeners.
Yes, a very useful quote there by Mr. Burr. In 17th century colonial America, the supernatural was considered a part of everyday life, really. In much the same way that reruns of The A-Team is part of your everyday life, Matt.
I ain't getting on this plane, fool. And I certainly ain't going to eat that hamburger. You offering me? Not again. I ain't going to be tricked. I'm going to eat this hamburger again instead.
apologies to our listeners born before 1985 there. Word of advice, though, if you are, go and download the original A-Team series. Much better than the film, of course.
In our humble opinion.
Yes, although I have to say the marksmanship displayed is not a very good testament to firearm training in the US military.
Oh, God, they could never hit anyone, could they?
They couldn't.
They're always there. But, yeah.
Anyway.
George Pep articles. The Face Man.
Genius actor.
Happy days. Download it, guys.
Underrated. Anyway, we digress. Many people believed that the dreaded Satan was present and active on Earth. A theory perhaps supported by the fact people thought it was okay to eat tripe at the time.
Yeah, and there's no excuse for that.
No.
Tripe. This concept, though, emerged in Europe during the 15th century, as we mentioned earlier, and spread with the later colonisation of North America. Peasants commonly used a kind of witchcraft to invoke various charms for farming and agriculture.
They did. Summon the
paganism type things.
And over time, in the New World, as in the Old, the idea of white magic
good
transformed
magic.
Into dark magic.
Bad, evil, nasty.
Yeah, and became associated with demons and evil spirits.
Again, bad, evil, nasty.
From 1560 to 1670, witchcraft persecutions became common as superstitions became associated with the devil and evil.
In the book, Against Modern Sadicism.
1668, I believe.
The author Joseph Glanville claimed mightily he could prove the existence, no less, of witches and ghosts of the supernatural realm. Mm. Glanville wrote about the denial of body resurrection and the supernatural spirit.
Mm.
Now, in his treatise, he claimed that the ingenious men should believe in witches and apparitions. If they doubted the reality of spirits, why not only denied demons, but also the almighty God himself, okay? So Glanville wanted to prove that the supernatural could not be denied. Those who did deny apparitions were considered heretics, for it also disproved their beliefs in angels.
Well, he's got them there, Matt.
He has indeed. He's a clever chap. Work by men such as Glanville and Cotton Mather tried to prove that demons were alive.
Yeah.
So was God, though. So you can't deny either.
So a brief historical background to the trials now then. What is happening locally?
Well, it's the May Fair, of course, come up to May.
I'm not
May
sure if they had it, but not now.
Oh, wait, okay, yeah.
Back in 1689.
Probably cook a roast joint later.
Yeah, well, that's not. We don't know about your dinner plans for this evening.
1689.
So we're in 1689. So the English rulers, William and Mary, roast started potatoes. With France again in the American colonies. Known as King William's War to Colonists. Not very imaginative. It ravaged regions of upstate New York, Nova Scotia, and Quebec, up in Canada, of course. Sending refugees streaming into the county of Essex, and specifically Salem Village in the Massachusetts Bay Colony.
Now, as would be expected, the displaced people created a strain on Salem's resources.
Healthcare, schools.
Yeah, haven't we seen this in Europe, possibly? It's very political at the moment. This aggravated the existing rivalry between families with ties to the wealth of the port of Salem and those who depended on the agriculture of the region. Controversy also brewed over Reverend Samuel Parris, who became Salem's first sort of ordained minister. So, yeah.
Of the same year, wasn't it? It was,
yeah, 1689. Yeah. Now, this Parris, the man, not the city, was disliked because of his rigid ways, we're not talking in the trouser department, and he had a very greedy nature. More on this shortly. The Puritan villagers believed all the quarrelling was the work of the devil, no less.
Mm, well, Salem Village.
Now, hi to our listeners in Danvers, Massachusetts.
Oh, yes, hello.
Now, hope you're not burning anyone today. Keep it light, keep it friendly, no burning.
Well, Salem Village, thanks for that, Matt, was known for its many internal disputes and for disputes between the village and the town, remember? Salem Mate, Town.
Yes, present-day Salem, remember? Yeah. Not
Didn't
Salem
even
town.
Bother changing the name after all of this.
Famous for it.
So arguments about property lines, grazing rights for their animals and church privileges were rife at this time. And neighbours considered the population as quarrelsome. Sounds pretty bad, doesn't it? Now, in 1670...
Like an ex-wife.
Could be, yeah. In 1672, the villagers had voted to hire a minister of their own, apart from that ministry in Salem Town. So the first two ministers, a chap called James Bailey...
Now, he was 1673, listeners, to 79.
That's right, yeah, lost about 2.5 years. And another guy called George Burroughs.
Yeah, and that is 1680 to 83. That's so 3 years for that chap.
Similar term there, what's going on. They stayed only a few years each, as we say. So, departing after the congregation failed to pay their full rate.
Now then, despite the minister's rights being upheld by the general court and the parish basically was admonished for not paying them their full rate, the ministers still decided to leave. The third minister, a chap called Deodat Lawson...
He came in 1684, so straight away afterwards to 88. He
so this is really... this is like a swinging door, isn't it? Lots of different ministers coming in. He only stayed for a short time as well, leaving after the refusal of the church in Salem to ordain him and not over issues with the congregation.
Yeah, well, there's clearly something going on here that's a bit thorny. Nobody, you know, these guys are constantly
people don't stay in Salem for long.
Hmm.
The parish disagreed about the choice of a Samuel Parris as the Salem Village first ordained minister. Now, on June the 18th, 1689, the villagers agreed to hire Parris for the princely sum of £66 annually.
Probably about what, just over $100.
Yeah, one third in money, other two thirds to be provided in provisions, apparently, for this guy. So it was a bit of food, bit of clothing, and a little bit of money.
So, though the Prime Minister's fate and the level of contention in Salem Village were valid reasons for caution in accepting that position, this Reverend Paris increased the village divisions by delaying his acceptance. So I'm not sure what's going on here, but there's clearly... people clearly aren't happy about something. There's issues with the church going on here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he does not seem to have any gift for settling his new parishioners' disputes either. You'd think the church can come in.
So he was basically not a particularly good guy, really, wasn't he? He was sort of like the worst. They had three good guys. No one wanted the post. So eventually they settled on this guy.
Well, in fact... Well, he actually, you know, sort of by deliberately seeking out, like, iniquitous behaviour in his congregation and making church members in good standing suffer public penance for small infractions, he's clearly trying to clamp down on this, he contributed significantly to the tension within the village. So its bickering continued to grow unabated. Why are we laying down this background? Well, because... Historian Marion Starkey suggests that in this atmosphere, serious conflict in Salem may have been inevitable. Everyone's a little bit thorny. Would this influence the trials? But how, Matt, did the first ember of the flaming hysteria about witchcraft become a hot topic?
Well, let me answer that one. Prior to 1692...
Oh, there's no smoke without fire, is what I'm trying to say. Mm-hmm. Unless the smoke is artificially created, eh, Matt? You see?
Some kind
like
of
a smoke raid or something like that?
Or a dragon's nostrils creating folk smoke. Yes, yes, right, okay. So prior to 1692, there had been rumours of witchcraft, no less, in villages neighbouring Salem Village and other towns. A chap called Cotton Mather, a minister of Boston's North Church, was a prolific...
Not to be confused with the later Anglican North Church of Paul Revere fame, of course. Mate.
Of course, I'm sure the listeners will be thinking, ah, yes, of course, thank God they've done that.
He nailed that one, yeah.
He was a prolific publisher, this chap, of pamphlets, of course, pamphlets, very powerful in the day of the printing press.
He hit them with like a major, and I mean major, leaflet campaign.
Prisoners. And a firm believer, this guy, was of witchcraft. So, of course, he had the ability to get the message out, and he believed in witchcraft.
The communicator.
In his book, Memorable Provinces Relating to Witchcrafts and Possessions of 1689.
That's very catchy.
Yeah, it's a bestseller. Mather describes his oracular observations and how stupendous witchcraft had affected the children of a Boston Freemason, a chap called John Goodwin.
Indeed, well... Mather illustrates how Goodwin's eldest child had been tempted by the devil. Now, this is pretty terrifying, Matt. The devil obviously tempted this kid in this man's eyes. And what
he's
going to
do? He's going to do something really bad. Awful. If the devil was ever going to come out and do something, it would be really terrible. I mean, like, did he try and steal someone's soul?
Well, I hope you're sitting down, listeners, because, no, he actually stole linen from the washerwoman, Goody Glover.
No, not that.
Well, the problem was...
That is beastly crime.
It's terrible, isn't it?
Beastly crime.
Still illegal.
Soul-steering, but it wasn't.
Even today. Now, Glover was a disagreeable old woman.
Of course she was.
Described by her husband, no less, as a witch.
We've all done that, listeners. No, we haven't, of course. This is
This may have been
forthcoming and forthright podcast of free-minded individuals.
That's right, remember
would
that.
Never call that... to anyone.
Well, I'm guessing that it might be because her husband called her, which, you know, that might have been why she was accused of casting spells on the Goodwin children.
Mm.
Now, after the event, 4 out of 6 Goodwin children, a lot of kids in those days, listeners, began to have strange fits. Now, here we go, start to get stuck into the meat of Salem witchcraft trials here now, Matt. Things are starting to happen.
Oh, yes, they are.
The 4 out of these 6 children, they had started to have strange fits, or what some people referred to as, a bit weird, the disease of astonishment. Maybe they're just sort of sitting there a bit, doughy-eyed, staring.
Yeah.
The manifestations attributed to the disease quickly became associated with witchcraft. Symptoms of this, Matt, included neck and back pains.
That sounds harmless or armless.
Well, tongues being drawn from their throats.
I don't know what that means, though. That's a bit weird.
No, maybe sort of screaming or something.
Yeah.
And loud, random outcries.
Pubescent teenage moods, potentially?
Could be, sounds like that sort of thing. Now, other symptoms included having no control over their bodies, such as becoming limber.
Oh, yeah, flapping their arms, maybe, or...
Yeah, sort of like, you know, flapping their arms like a bird. That's another one. Yeah. Or trying to harm others as well as themselves.
Sounds like typical teenagers to me, though, so far. When you deny them something they actually want to have, that they have.
We understand that now, thanks to Freud and the like, but in those days, you know, it freaked people out. So these symptoms would then fuel the craze, Matt, of 1692.
Oh, this podcast is quite literally cast a spell on me. Right, most accounts begin with the afflictions of the girls in the Paris household.
At Paris, he's the reverend, remember?
Yeah, the guy they brought in. In Salem Village, in February 1692, Betty Paris, who's only aged 9, and her cousin Abigail Williams, only aged 11.
Surely can't be witches.
The daughter and niece, respectively, of Reverend Samuel Paris, began to have fits described as beyond the power of epileptic fits or natural disease to affect.
Wow, it's a pretty serious thrashing going on
by the rather serious John Hale, the minister of a nearby town, of
Beverley. Wasn't it? That's
Beverley,
right.
Yes. A town, not a lady's name, or actually both, but in this case it was just a town. The girl screamed, threw things about the room, uttered strange sounds, crawled under furniture and contorted themselves into peculiar positions.
It's a bit creepy, that, yeah.
According to the eyewitness account of Reverend Didat Lawson, remember that guy? Himself, the former minister of Salem Village.
So if you've got a church minister telling you this stuff and corroborating it,
they're all going, something afoot in Salem that's making these girls act a little bit strange.
Well, it continues, Matt, because the girls and some other women in the town complained of being pinched and feeling pricks.
What? Yes. Feeling pricks?
Well, no, being pricked with pins, I mean.
Oh, right, you know, okay. I was going to say, it sounds like my hometown where a lot of the girls have been accused of feeling...
High birth rate. High birth rate. Must be pretty disconcerting, eh, Mark? I would be. So,
yeah.
Now, a doctor, historically assumed to be a chap called William Griggs, he could find no physical evidence of any ailments going on here.
I'm sure he had a good look, though.
I'm sure he did. But it was obviously a massive surprise to us, nothing going on here. Other young women in the village began to exhibit similar behaviours. What is this mass hysteria? What's going on here? When Lawson preached in Salem Village Meeting House, he was interrupted several times, Matt, by the outbursts of the afflicted, Matt. What is going on?
Well, let me paint a picture for you on what exactly was going on.
I hope that picture isn't too terrifying.
Let's hope not. The first three people accused and arrested for the allegedly afflicting Betty Paris, Abigail Williams and the 12-year-old Anne Putman were Sarah Good, Sarah Osborne and Tituba.
Careful, Matt. This is a family show. Yeah.
Tituba was merely a name.
Oh, it's a name, right.
Yeah, they're not all just the good old Anglican names. The accusation by Anne Putman, Jr. is seen by some historians as evidence of a family feud.
I see, right.
This may have been the cause of the trial, actually. Oh. As simple as a family feud. At the time, a vicious rivalry was underway between the Putmans and the Porter families. One which deeply polarised the people of Salem, got them nattering, got them all interested in the intrigues of these particular families and their feud.
Yeah, well, very cliquey communities, of course, in these places.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it should be pointed out, Matt, that the girls made their accusations under pressure from magistrates. Yeah, okay.
There'd be politics at play here.
Yeah. Well, let's look at the first three accused here. You have the tantalisingly named Tituba.
Good old Tituba.
Which is actually the Paris' Caribbean slave.
Yeah.
That explains the name. Sarah Good, which is a homeless beggar.
Poor girl.
And Sarah Osborne, an elderly, impoverished woman. Now, what's going on? There seems to be something you can tie together with these three.
Exactly. So, they're all looking like they're sort of obvious people with no one to support them.
Well, yes. So, none of those
lone
were likely...
gunman.
None of those were likely to have an immediate family or support network they could call upon, of course. So it's then against the world.
Mm-hmm.
They were all isolated women on the fringes of society. Mm. They were viewed as almost subhuman, the very dregs of the community, Matt, right at the bottom there.
Nice.
A modern-day equivalent may be, for example, estate agents or management accountants. Modern days.
All three women were brought before the local magistrates and interrogated for several days. Starting on March 1st, 1692.
So we're off. The trials are off.
Now, Osborne claimed innocence, of course, as did Good, because probably they were. But Tituba confessed.
She did?
She is quoted, bizarrely, as saying, "The devil came to me and bid me serve him." She described elaborate images of black dogs.
Maybe a Labrador, lovely temperaments, of course.
Red cats, though, Wayne.
Might mean ginger, like a ginger tom or something.
Yellow birds.
A canary, for example, is perfectly normal.
And a black man?
Black or African-American.
Of course, of course.
Be more specific.
These people wanted her to sign his book.
Really?
Devil's book, presumably.
Oh, okay.
She admitted that she signed the book and said there were several other witches looking to destroy the Puritans. All three women were put in jail.
Well,
now, they didn't want to cast them, you know, bring a demon or anything. They just wanted to sign a book. That's the way to do it. Steal some linen and sign a book.
But why did she say that? I mean, you know, the seed of paranoia was now planted. And that seed, Matt, was watered with a stream of accusations for the next few months, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, charges against Martha Corey, who was a loyal member of the church in Salem Village.
That seed was fed by a stream of ignorance and fear.
That's right.
In a watery, nutrient form.
Yeah, so charges against this Martha Corey woman. Remember, she was a loyal member of the church. That greatly concerned the community. Why? Well, because if she could be a witch, anyone could, Matt.
Ah, yes.
But in fact, magistrates even questioned Sarah Good's 4-year-old daughter,
That's
Dorothy.
Ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous.
You know, and her, as you might expect, timid answers were construed as a confession. So this is starting to get totally out of control now.
Dorothy simply said she gave, she signed a book given to her by the Tin Man, a lion, and a scarecrow.
Yeah, we've all done it. The questioning got more serious in April again.
Wizard of Oz joke there to the observant listeners.
When the deputy governor, a guy called Thomas Danforth, and his assistants attended the hearings, dozens of people from Salem and other Massachusetts villages were brought in for questioning now.
So
it's starting to grow.
It's beginning to become a bulbous head of intrigue. On May the 27th, 1692, Governor William Phillips, this chap, right, he ordered the establishment of a special court of oyer,
which is to hear,
and termina,
which is to decide.
So a court to hear and decide. Mm. In the bizarrely named
like most
counties
courts,
of,
probably didn't need to call it that. Most courts, you listen and then you decide.
Yeah, and these courts, bizarrely, were in the Massachusetts versions of Suffolk, Essex and Middlesex counties.
That's right.
The first case brought to this special court was Bridget Bishop, an older woman known for her gossipy habits and promiscuity.
Ooh.
When asked if she committed witchcraft, Bishop responded, "I'm innocent as an unborn child." At last,
pretty innocent.
A sensible answer. This must have brought sanity to the proceedings. Finally, something you can get your teeth stuck into.
Well, not
more
really.
Sanity.
Not really, Matt. The defence must not have been that convincing, actually, because she was found guilty. And on June the 10th, became the first person hanged on what was later called Gallows Hill. Good name. Descriptive. It must have been a very anxious time for all those people involved in the courtroom, Matt. In fact, to try and bring that back, see how it might have felt, let's go back now and soak up some of the trial's drama. Order! Order! Bring forth the next defendant, please, adjudicant, a Mr. J. Spasmode. Bring him!
Here he is, Lord! He's an ugly one, this one is, sire. Look at him, he's got one of them eyebrows that joins together in the middle, sire. It'd be ungodly, ungodly. It says so in the scriptures, sir. Help me, God, sir. Help me, God.
It's called a unibrow, actually, and it's normal in my family. It's my testosterone levels, I'm told. I ate a lot of meat as a child. Maybe hairy on top, but underneath I'm bald as a coot.
I understand not this strange testosterone of which you speak.
Well,
Spasmode.
It's scientifically proved.
Be you a witch?
No.
Or warlock?
No.
Confess, you evil vessel of the devil, and let's get this over with quickly. I'm eager to take lunch.
And sire, and he called me Jason. on the way in here, sire. Oh. How could he have known that, eh? He didn't know my name. I never even seen him before, sire.
I see.
He knows something.
Strange.
It's actually on your name badge. Look, right there. That's how I knew you were Jason.
Why are you wearing a name badge, guard?
It's my first day, sire. Anyway, he ain't right in being able to read, sire. Not with him being a miller's son and always a miller's son.
Oh, good point. Burn him!
Red! Wait, hang on. This is a court of law. I demand a fair trial. Why am I here? I haven't done anything wrong. I'm a valuable member of society and a God-fearing Christian. It was only last week, I can tell you this, I helped Mrs. Miggins out by clearing out her chimney. I was up her chimney for hours, ramming to and fro. I was covered in muck.
I say, Mr. Spazpode, spare us your foul appellations, please. There are women present. Granted, some are to be burned, no doubt, but still... We do not want to hear of your disgusting, ungodly, devil-driven passions here. Oh, no, wait. Oh, we do, don't we? Oh, yeah. Right.
Well, I don't get it, okay? Look, what is wrong with being up her chimney? Why are people so shocked at this? I just took my pole, I rammed it up her chimney until the muck spurted out of the top. And she's very happy now. I did a good job.
This wanton display of foul corruption and disregard for the sensibilities of civilised society leave no doubt in my mind that thee be a terrible servant of the devil himself.
I'm not a servant of the devil.
Never have I heard of such swaggering boasting of the disgusting, yet admittedly pleasurable, act of sex twixt a man and a woman.
It wasn't sex, I was cleaning out my chimney.
Call the first witness, adjudicant.
Here he is, sire. Yeah, Mr. I.P. Freely. He's the town's blacksmith. A very reputable and God-fearing sir. Man, he's a God-fearing man, sir. He craps himself at the sight of God.
Freely. Don't I remember you? Oh, yes. You stood trial for exposing your genitals in public last June, didn't you?
He did, sir. I saw that. But it didn't stand up in court, sire. Begging your pardon, he was found not guilty.
Very well. Freely, tell the court what you saw. Yes, sire. Of course, sire. It was a dark night, sire. Well, I mean... You know, light enough to see people's faces and the like, clearly, but dark. Well, more murky, I guess. Yeah, that's it, murky. It was murky, sire. Now, spooky too, ladies and gentlemen of the court, it was. I was heading into the forest to achieve a batch of charcoal for my furnace, right? So I was. When, Lord protect me, I did spy the foul creature standing before you, performing... An unspeakable, ladies and gentlemen, act of evil. In the service of the devil himself, he be. That was as clear to these two eyes of mine as a springing jackrabbit is to an eagle it was. I stopped dead in my tracks, I did. I heard a terrible wheezing and grunting sound and cast a glance through the cloying mists, ladies and gentlemen of the court, to see this demon here, hunched over, a dog of the devil he was. Coupling with a hell-spawned canine he was, like the doggy be himself.
Oh, God!
You're the dog!
No! It wasn't a dog, it was a goat, and I was actually milking it.
Good God, man! Have you no shame?
No, you misunderstand. I own goats. I was milking my goat herd. I was going to make goat's cheese. For the poor crippled Ebna, who lives by the pond. I'm famous for my goat cheese, you know I am.
No. It was a hellhound with four tummy bananas. Not a goat, ladies and gentlemen. A hellhound with horns. And the dread eyes of a demon, I say. It had a terrible piercing, sort of braying bark. Like a bleat, almost, it was. looked unnatural, it did. I turned and I ran, I did, sire. I was terrified. Terrified of the possessed here and his ungodly beast.
Okay. Good enough for me, Freely. Verdict. Guilty of being a witch due to an ungodly act with one of God's creatures. And due to an act so awful and unforgivable that no punishment can be considered merciful in the eyes of our Lord. The act of making goat's cheese. Burn him! Burn the witch or warlock or whatever.
Well, I don't know about you, Wayne, but I'm not entirely convinced.
Don't know what to believe, man.
The inefutable evidence that's brought up in that court. But people must have been very paranoid that they could be up for investigation for the slightest thing in Salem. Or even, in some cases, just someone's word with no evidence whatsoever.
Well, so it seems indeed. And not everyone was blind to this fact, Matt. 5 days later, the respected minister, Cotton Mather, wrote a letter imploring the court not to allow spectral evidence, that is, testimony about dreams and visions. Sounds fair. The court largely ignored this request, though, and 5 people were sentenced and hanged in July, 5 more in August, and 8 in September.
Jeez, that's a load of foot. There's a lot of deaths going on there.
Well, it's starting to rack up now. Yeah. And on October the 3rd, following in his son's footsteps, Increase Mather, strange name, then president of Harvard, actually, denounced the use of spectral evidence entirely. In fact, he said, "It were better that 10 suspected witches should escape than one innocent person be condemned," he said.
Well, hooray for someone who's basically a little bit more intelligent and sane. But Governor Phipps, in response to Mather's plea for his own wife being questioned for witchcraft, prohibited further arrests.
At last.
He then released many of the accused witches and dissolved the courts of Oyer and Terminer to see and to try. On October the 29th, Phipps replaced it with a superior court of judicature that disallowed spectral evidence and only condemned 3 out of the 56 defendants.
Bit better.
Phipps eventually pardoned all who were in prison on witchcraft charges in May 1693. But the damage had been done. 19 were hanged on the gallows hill by that point. A 71-year-old man was pressed to death, which could have been pretty horrible, by heavy stones. Several people died in jail, and nearly 200 people overall had been accused of practicing the devil's magic.
So, were the girls of the unassuming town of Salem really afflicted in the manner discussed? Or were lesser symptoms of perhaps an illness? Or a mental affliction, simply embellished to suit these accusations? We're all familiar with the modern phrase witch hunt, Matt, which suggests the unreasonable pursuit of an individual, you know, for like scapegoat purposes. But is there actually any compelling evidence of witchcraft in the records? Was it simply the church and fear of the unknown which sparked the fears? The short answer is probably no, actually. But how do you prove someone has been cursed and turned into a pig, Matt? All we have are accounts which are written down. There's no physical evidence actually available to us here. So instead, let's have a look at some of the former's evidence which were permissible in the witches' trials themselves.
Well, number one, witches' marks. Abnormal markings on the accused person's body.
Like, that's like sort of moles or birthmarks, etc.
Or 3 little sixes tattooed into your ear. So straight away, the evidence is being opened up for being ambiguous. Right there. Unless you have a very strange and obviously unnatural birthmark, like a starfish on your arse or something like that. For example, poor old Mr. Gorbachev wouldn't have survived well in this environment.
Yeah, you're obsessed with starfish, you. Now, number two. The inability to recite prayers. It was a commonly held belief that witches were unable to recite prayers without making mistakes. An issue many of us heathens would struggle with today, I fear, as well.
So perhaps the Lord's Prayer, hallowed be thy name.
So straight away, you said, hallowed be thy name. So you're a witch.
Oh my God. 3, spectral evidence. Any evidence that can be seen by the victims of a witch.
For example, a crow on a witch's shoulder, the devil standing in the corner of a room, and other such ridiculous, unprovable, absolute cack.
You've only got their word for it. Number four, artifacts. That is, sort of witchy objects owned by the accused person. Perhaps a broomstick. Although, presumably, most households actually had one of those. Or maybe a black cat mat.
Oh, a familiar.
Yes, that's right. Yes, black cats would be familiar, though, because, again, I'd have thought, you know, cats would be very welcome in many households for their vermin eradicating skills.
Oh, of course.
Catching mice and such. So it's not really odd for a woman to be living in, you know, who's living in a rural area to have one, a cat or a broomstick for that matter. Maybe it's because witches tend to congregate in women-only covens that it's believed they like pussies, Matt, you know.
Pussycats. Pussycats, of course, yes. Number five, the touch test.
Your favourite?
Many Puritans believe that a witch could stop the wailing, hysterics and fits of his or her victims through the power of touch.
Oh.
Perhaps a slap around the face would stop a hysterical woman crying.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Or perhaps if a bloke, for example, felt lethargic, a touch of the boot to a pair of saggy balls would perhaps create in him a lack of lethargy. That would do the job, right?
Number six, the old classic, of course, confessions.
Oh, confess.
That is a forced or voluntary admission of guilt. It's important to note the voluntary admissions were usually volunteered after some fairly unpleasant torture.
Number seven, and my personal favourite, witch cakes. Oh yes, are we maybe not familiar with the old witch cakes, are
we? Delicious.
Some people believe that a witch would be forced to reveal him or herself if a cake was baked using rye flour, of course, evil rye flour, and the urine of the afflicted, and then the cake was fed to a dog. Now, let's face it, I'm not sure many of us would like to have a urine...
I'd be feeding it to the dog.
Urine cake. No, you know. I don't think forensics existed to the level that they could detect urine in a cake. No. I suspect the smell may be pretty good.
Sufficient, probably.
Sufficient. And maybe there was just feeding a cake that tasted horrible to their dog because they couldn't bear eating it. Basically, a witch that couldn't cook well, or a woman that couldn't cook well, could well be a witch.
Yeah,
especially if she urinated in her own cooking.
Well... An issue, of course, you're all too familiar with, Matt. I've never seen a fatter dog. Number eight is eyewitness testimony. Anything that a witnessing person saw that could indicate witchcraft. Again, this is a fairly tenuous form of evidence to base the taking of someone's life on, which is why, as law and the understanding of the sciences continue to develop, witchcraft trials were eventually outlawed in all forms... in most of the world, in the 18th century. That said, there are still stories of trials happening in some places today, Matt.
Alas, the world is not equally enlightened in all places. Believe it or not, in 2005, a poll of Canadians and people from the UK, that's us, listeners, found that 13% of people believed in witches still. In America, it was 21%.
Oh.
But then I guess it's quite cool at the moment to be a witch or a vampire, isn't it? You know, like the Twilight Saga, the originals, they have witchcraft in that.
Less risk of getting murdered for it, so.
Yeah. But as you say today, witch trials still occur all over the world.
They do, yeah.
Organisations like the United Nations and an organisation called the Stepping Stones Nigeria have found that the number of witch trials around the world is actually increasing.
Increasing?
That's ridiculous, isn't it? They're almost always violent, these things, and sometimes end in the death of the accused.
Well, it seems amazing to us, but this is especially true in places with poor medical care or few educational opportunities. Now, according to the World Health Organization...
Who?
nearly 25%... 25% of pregnant women in Zambia are infected with HIV/AIDS. Very sad. But men, women and children are accused of spreading HIV/AIDS through witchcraft, highlighting the whole education issue, you know.
Mm.
In fact, some of the accused are leaders in the scientific community or government advisors. So-called witch hunters have been known to kill those accused of witchcraft with poisonous tea. And in one town in Zambia, a witch hunter killed 16 people in fewer than 4 months. This is like this is the modern day we're talking about here.
Dozens of people have been killed in Papua New Guinea. In January 2009, so what, 7 years ago, a young girl was burned alive, accused of being a witch and infecting men with HIV, AIDS. Then a month later, a father and son were burned alive for being accused of witchcraft as well.
Wow. Well, so what about real witchcraft? Have we got any white witches out there listening? If you have, please write in. Tell us how we could maybe
deal with the
hangover. Now, the most widely observed witchcraft-based religion in the Western world is the faith system a lot of you guys would have heard about, Wicca, of course, W-I-C-C-A, which was officially recognised as a religion in the US back in the early 90s. It was created in the early 1940s by a chap called Gerald Gardner and is largely based on sort of ancient Druidism. The word wiki, that's the same with an E.
Not WikiLeaks, not Wikipedia.
Was Anglo-Saxon in origin and meant to bend. Make of that what you will, and evolved into the Middle English Wicca, or from masculine Old English, Wicca, meaning, this is more like it, sorcerer. So it's the root of the word witch and wicked. The witch being wicked, you see what's happening?
Yeah, I see. So Wicca was formed as a sort of spin-off, if you will, of Druidy Celtic religion that existed more than 1,000 years ago. One problem with this, however, is that the Druidic order was an oral tradition.
Sounds like a lot of fun, Wayne.
So nothing about these rituals was ever written down. It was passed from Druidy noble to Druidy noble, meaning most of the modern practices are based largely on guesswork and the outsider's account. And of course, outsiders were not in the know, alas. Names like cat's paw or maiden hair, often written as ingredients of spells or potions, are code words used to place in place of the actual names of the plants.
That's right, yeah.
It was a common practice among farming people to disguise the name of the herbs and other such plants so that others wouldn't know what the bloody recipe was, right? Yeah. Makes sense. We're all quite proud of our family recipes, aren't we? And so were the Druids. They kind of just called them matron's nipple, for example, probably was like a fern or something like that. So, some are actually the proper names for certain herbs. There are plants called serpent's tongue, for example, or bird's foot and mouse's ear.
That's right. Well, I suppose if you've got this carefully guarded potion that's passed down through generations and is probably either giving you some sort of position of strength in your local community and respect, or maybe you sell it.
You don't want to sell share the love, do you?
Exactly. You don't want everyone to be able to do this. So you want to protect it and be careful. Yeah. Well, then there's also paganism, of course. The term pagan originally meant rustic or country dweller. Paganism refers today to ancient religions, you know, like Druidry or the pantheons of the Greeks and Roman empires, that sort of thing. Neo-paganism refers to a new faith system of reconstructions of old religions like Wicca we just talked about and theodism. The four categories of neo-paganism are animism.
Now, that's the belief, listeners, that non-human entities are spiritual beings.
Spiritual beings, that's right. Then we've got polytheism.
Belief that there is more than one god.
That's right. Then we've got pantheism.
The view that the universe or nature and God are actually identical.
Yeah, tree huggers, basically. And shamanism.
Very familiar with this one. The belief that shamans are intermediaries or messengers between the human world and the spirit worlds.
That's right. Pop on a feather headdress, lick a toad and have a little dance.
Then tell people what's going on.
That's right, yeah.
So I guess with that logic, there are witches, if you want to call them that, if they want to call themselves that. And it's likely that practicing Wiccans and pagans were killed for their beliefs in the past and probably in the present. But for the most part, they were gentle people with a closeness to nature and good hearts.
That's right. Well,
questionable hair, of course.
So these trials we've talked about today, why were they allowed to be taken to their ultimately deadly conclusion within their communities? Well, a major factor contributing to the mass hysteria that led to witch hunts and hangings and the like was the deep-rooted Salem rivalry between the village folk of the west part of the town and the village folk of the east side. The Westerners were farmers and the Easterners were businessmen / store owners. Or maybe it's as simple as this as we go towards the conclusion of this podcast. There's a theory out there that, like anything else that's associated with the Salem witch trials, can't really be verified. But it says that the reason for the hysteria in Salem was due to the fact that their grain supply was infected by ergo, which is it's sort of like a rot bacteria sort of thing that affects grain, which can cause hallucinations.
Mm. Well, that would certainly explain it, wouldn't it? Mm. So that's Salem. But the reason for witchcraft and the associated executions in the wider world appear, unfortunately, to be nothing more than good old-fashioned ignorance, fear, a bit of one-upmanship, and people using the fears and all these ignorance for their own political or personal gain.
So a little bit of money to be gained and people taking advantage of those less fortunate than themselves, it seems. So that concludes our episode on witchcraft. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. Now, we should say at this point that we've been having a lot of interest and messages coming through on email and Facebook. So please keep them coming. We've got some great ideas lining up now for you guys. If you want to contact us to either pass comment or maybe make a suggestion, then where can they contact us, Matt?
Well, we've got Twitter on Historical Pod, and that's Historical Pod. We've got Facebook under Historical
Pod again, yeah.
Pod.
Same spelling.
The email address, Wayne, is...
That's historical@hotmail.com. So that is historical@hotmail.com.
Yeah, so we'd love to hear from you. And if you can, we'd be very much appreciative if you were an iTunes listener. If you go onto iTunes and maybe give us a review, we'd always appreciate an extra review. So thank you very much. And please, listeners, don't do anything that could make you the victim of a witch trial. And ultimately, to be burned alive.
Take care.